coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
It's the convention that begins the buzz and thrills thousands of genre fans.
We'll have a report on the biggest highlights from San Diego Comic-Con from Mike Cicchini, the editor of Den of Geek US.
All of that, and of course the big sell, it's happening right now on Inside Pop.
Hey, y'all, I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson, and this is Inside Pop, your dive inside the world of pop culture. We are going to get right to it and introduce friend of the podcast, entertainment journalist and editor-in-chief of Den of Geek US, Mike Cicchini. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
Mike is somehow sitting upright, eyes are open, after a very intense time at San Diego Comic-Con. So, Mike, thanks you for summoning up the strength and the courage to come onto our podcast and talk to us all about Comic-Con 2018.
It's my pleasure. It's always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Oh, thanks again for joining us one more time to geek out over pop culture, which we all love to do. You know, it's such an inside experience that you get to attend Comic-Con as a fan, but how insane is it to actually cover it for Den of Geek?
It's a lot. We brought the biggest team we've ever brought this year. I mean, we brought like 6 or 7 writers, and we had a cameraman and an on-camera personality and an interview suite, and we had a street team to distribute 60,000 copies of our magazine. So it's a lot, but, you know, you just got to kind of make your schedule, which is, the beauty of making a Comic-Con schedule is you get to redo the whole thing the day before the show. and everybody's ready for it. And, you know, we're not digging ditches. It's a fun job.
Yeah.
How many years have you been going now?
This is my 5th year.
All right.
My first year was 2013, and I was the only representative of Den of Geek US there. The only person from denofgeek.com at the show in 2013. And my press pass was kind of obtained by questionable means, and I wasn't actually invited to any of the interviews that I showed up to. And here we are 5 years later. So it's pretty cool, and I'm lucky to have a team that allows this to happen every year.
So this is 5 years for you, and I'm always interested to ask, say, like, for example, film critics, how do you see 1,000 films a year and still maintain a love of film? So how do you maintain your spirit of being a fan, but kind of balance that with the obligations of being a journalist at Comic-Con?
Well, There's two sides to that. It's very easy to it's very easy to kind of get caught up in the fanness of it all, because frankly, a lot of the interviews that you tend to get at Comic-Con, you're not offered the opportunity to dig particularly deep on subjects. There's a lot of, you know, all the talent is really coached. They're there to kind of present what's next. And, you know, you find what nuggets of cool information you can, and you make what you can out of them. But, you know, it's not like it's not like some investigative mission that I'm on. You know, you're just kind of there to find out what your audience wants to hear about and balance that with, you know, with whatever message the talent is obviously trying to get across. And as for me personally, I mean, San Diego is such a beautiful city, and the weather here is always perfect, and everybody here is really, really nice. And that makes it easy. I mean, the crowds can be overwhelming, and the hours are very, very long, and it's very tiring, but I just watched 150,000 people converge on, you know, an area that's like, you know, 10 square city blocks, and they all had the time of their lives. So if you can't feed off of some of that positivity, you know, you're not on the internet looking at negative comments. You're not on Twitter having your anxiety reinforced at every waking moment. You know, it really is. You just see people here because they love stuff, and they're not, you know, you see kids experiencing this for the first time. You see grown-ups interacting with people they admire. As a journalist, I was at a party the other night and I met one of my favorite comic book writers, like ever, like the legendary Marv Wolfman. I got to interview a bunch of people that I really, you know, whose work I admire. I just don't understand how you can't be positive and feel good about that. Even if you want to die by Saturday night.
Right. So Comic-Con, it's still important, because the other thing I hear about, or the criticisms I'll hear about Comic-Con is, it doesn't really, well, maybe it's not a criticism, but I do remember reading some things about, you know, or questioning, is Comic-Con still a game changer? Is it still, like, does Wonder Woman 1984 need to come out of Comic-Con with positive buzz? You know, so is it still a force in the industry?
Yes, it is. And by the time this podcast goes live, I will have an article on DenaGeek.com addressing exactly this, because I think one of the and I hope I'm not jumping the gun on anything you have planned for the rest of this interview. Warner Brothers needed a win, not for Wonder Woman 1984, but for their overall efforts with their DC movies. They really needed a win at this show. And they had an opportunity, because there was a vacuum there with Marvel Studios skipping it this year. And Warner Brothers put together a tremendous presentation in Hall H on Saturday morning. And it would have been a strong presentation anyway, regardless of whatever narrative needs to be changed about their DC superhero movies. The Godzilla 2 trailer, for example, that they unveiled there, might just be the coolest trailer to come out of Comic-Con this year for Godzilla King of the Monsters. But everybody knows Wonder Woman 2 is going to be good. Everybody knows that Wonder Woman 1984 is going to be fine. It's the same creative team returning from the first movie. I have no reason to doubt that they're not going to even improve on the first film. But to get audiences to really believe in the strength of their DC Universe movies, Aquaman and Shazam needed to make a big, big impression, and they did. I'm curious to hear what you thought of those trailers, but Aquaman and Shazam made big, positive impressions on that Hall H crowd. There was buzz about them spilling out, you know, onto the show floor and around the convention. People were talking about those. When I finally made my way onto social media, I was pleasantly surprised to see a real groundswell of positive reaction for these movies. And with good reason. They're good trailers. So they needed that. So I think, I don't know. I don't know if it would have had the same impact if they would have just said, look, we're going to put the Aquaman trailer ahead of Ant-Man and the Wasp the week before Comic-Con. You know, they could have done that. They could have said, well, you know what? Warner Brothers has The Nun, the Conjuring spinoff, you know, and the Conjuring movies are James Wan, like Aquaman is James Wan, and The Nun, you know, and he produced it or whatever. But, like, that's coming out September 7th. They could have said, well, we'll stick the Aquaman trailer on that. There were plenty of ways they could have dropped that trailer. They chose to do it here, and I think it was the right move.
Yeah, I think I read your tweet about Aquaman before I actually saw the Aquaman trailer. So I was a little swayed by your excitement over it. But I loved it. I mean, I'm a huge James Wan fan. The Conjuring is one of my favorite horror movies of this century, 21st century, I guess. Love The Conjuring. Yes. And I actually liked his Fast and the Furious film. So I'm excited to see what he does with it. I think Jason Momoa has that nice balance, at least it seems so in the trailer, of being taking it seriously but also having fun. I'm really, and that just, like, the world that they seem to have created feels pretty marvelous.
I'm just here for Jason Momoa, guys.
That's fine.
That's
totally fine.
Although I was really happy to see that Nicole Kidman is involved as well, and that's That's a nice bonus for sure. Bringing in the big guns.
Yeah, I really hope it's I hope the movie lives up to the promise of that trailer. I got very excited when I spoke to James Wan about, you know, his vision for the movie, and he's very enthusiastic, and you know, the producer is very, like, they made their case, and I feel like they get it. And it's I think they've learned from their mistakes. I think the studio has kind of learned from their mistakes. I don't think they're trying to copy Marvel Studios with their business model here. And I think it kind of came through with fans. There was something unique about that Aquaman trailer. Am I right?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, there was something unique about it. I mean, I felt like, in a way, they were just kind of laying it all out there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is the movie. You're either going to like it or you're not, but we're not hiding what this movie is from you. I feel like some trailers do that, but I feel like they were just laying it all on the table.
Yeah, they pack a lot in there, don't they?
They do. They do. I'm like, okay, dude, don't give us too much. They gave us a lot of fun. But it's interesting because, and I really, really enjoyed the article that you wrote, your interview with James Wan and Jason Momoa. Amita will probably ask you what Jason Momoa smells like later in the in our interview. But
yes.
Do they seem like, it seemed like they know, yep, we know that Aquaman has been considered a joke. We admit that, but let's move on. How did they kind of respond to that?
Well, what James Wan said in particular was he loves the fact that this character is kind of considered a joke and is such an underdog. And that was why he was apparently offered several potential DC Universe projects. And he said, you know what? This is the one I want. And he did it because, you know, because he kind of felt like let's take this character that nobody has any real expectations for and turn him into something. And the producer, Peter Safran, said that he thinks that James chose Aquaman and that Aquaman is an underdog because, in a way, James Wan is an underdog in the superhero world. Everybody associates him with his horror work, and with good reason. I mean, The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2 are two of the best horror movies of this century. You're right. So to have James Wan doing this colorful kind of high adventure, you know, underwater fantasy is really, you know, when he was announced, I was like, really? James Wan for Aquaman? Okay. So they get it. And if the movie is really has that kind of tone throughout, if the story holds together, and the performances are as much fun as they appear to be, you know, maybe this will be another Wonder Woman for them.
I'd like that. I enjoyed Wonder Woman quite a bit, and it would be great to go see another DC franchise in the theaters, because I haven't seen any in a while since Wonder Woman. I did not see Justice League. Apologies. But I'm hoping. Fingers crossed for this one for me.
Yeah, I think they've course corrected from, you know, I think with Justice League, they unfortunately tried to fix things, you know, in the middle of everything. And it's not like, you know, and movie studios are like boats. It takes a while to steer them. Yeah. And, you know, and Justice League had well-publicized behind-the-scenes problems and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But they get it. I mean, I think they had gotten the message ahead of time. And Wonder Woman was a positive response to that. Mm-hmm. And Justice League was unfortunately felt like a bit of a hodgepodge. I enjoyed Justice League. I did, but it's not very good. But it at least felt a little bit more like what I want out of these movies, but it's certainly no Wonder Woman.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So in addition to Aquaman, are there any other, that seems to be a highlight for you. Are there any other highlights for you personally that have come out of this year's Comic-Con?
Well, just to stay on the DC superhero movies for a minute, I really liked that Shazam trailer.
Shazam.
Yeah,
right.
People have been talking about this one a lot.
Yeah, I'm curious what you guys thought about it.
I love Zachary Levi, so him in this kind of superhero role makes me happy. I think that it gave me like vibes of like that Kick-Ass type of thing without a lot of the vulgarity, I think. You know, kind of just like, he's a superhero, but he's trying to figure it out, and, you know, kind of that vibe, which was so fun, and I loved Kick-Ass. So yeah, I'm very intrigued into what's going to be this movie, Shazam. I also don't know, of course, you guys all know I'm like the least comic person of this group right now, and I don't know the origins of the Shazam. Somebody like to enlighten me here?
Well, Shazam has been around almost as long as Superman. That character has been around since 1939. And at one point, he was actually more popular than Superman. He was outselling Superman. Yeah, in the 1940s, at one point, Shazam was outselling Superman. Back at a time when comic books actually sold like a million copies a month. I mean, like crazy numbers, not like today. Wow. And as a result, national periodical publications, who eventually became DC Comics, they were constantly trying to take the Shazam publishers to court to shut, you know, to say, this is a Superman ripoff, you can't be publishing this. And eventually they just kind of wore them down, and they agreed in, you know, 1955 or whatever, to stop publishing the character and turned the rights over to, you know, to DC Comics. And in the 70s, DC said, well, wait a minute, why don't we revive this character? Because the character used to be called Captain Marvel. But they said, let's revive this character, but they certainly weren't going to publish a book, you know, with the name of their number one competition on the cover.
Right.
So they started calling the comic Shazam, but inside the pages of the book, it was still The Adventures of Captain Marvel. And then it was only recently that they finally decided, look, we can't keep doing this. So they've just decided to call the character Shazam now.
Oh, wow.
So... yeah, but the old, like, the Shazam comics from the 1940s are amazing because they're, like, these little, they were geared even more explicitly at younger readers, and they were almost like these little fairy tales, like these little eight-page, they're really, really great and really, really clever, and they are better written and better drawn than a lot of the other comics of that era. Obviously, that's not going to work for a modern audience necessarily. This one is based on a recent reinvention of the character, you know, by Jeff Johns, who's an executive producer on the movie, and an artist named Gary Frank. And this seems to be it's going pretty close to their vision of the character from like 2011. So I'm encouraged. The cast looks great. Yeah, Zachary Levi looks like he nails it. And I'm glad that they're not trying to. I'm glad they're not trying to steer themselves away from the innocence of it all. Does that make sense?
That does. And you know, not all superhero movies need to be dark and gritty and
right.
and PG-13 or R. I mean, it looks like that movie could be PG.
It could be.
Yeah.
It very well could be. So I don't know. I don't know anything about that. But it could be, and that would be great to see. I really hope that works, because that's a character that I really, really love. Like Aquaman, like I want to see Aquaman succeed, and the movie looks great, but I don't have like a huge history with Aquaman. I've been boning up on Aquaman recently, and there really are some great comic book stories with Aquaman. But Shazam is something that I have loved my whole life. I really hope they get that right, and that trailer was a good step in the right direction. But if you want to get this away from superheroes for a second, the two best trailers to come out of Hall H this weekend were Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and Glass, M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable, you know, trilogy capper. Those look really special to me.
I want to talk about Glass, because I saw pieces of that, I think, on, like, there was a lot of Insta stories, Instagrams, and all this stuff, and I was like, what is Glass? Is it Split and Unbreakable and something Bruce Willis was in that, not The Sixth Sense, though? Like, what is it?
it's the third part of, so think of Unbreakable as part one, mm-hmm. and Split as part two, and this is part three.
Okay.
And I mean, it, you know, a lot has been said about the really fallow period of M. Night Shyamalan's career. But I feel like the first thing I thought of when I saw this Glass trailer is this is a real fan of the genre, right? He makes these movies, but you can just tell he is a fan, right? Mm. He loves the movies he makes, and you know, he's made some pretty bad ones, but mm-hmm. he's also made some pretty good ones. And I think, I mean, I don't know. I'm always a huge fan of when multiple works exist in one world. I'm really excited for Castle Rock, for example. Mm. So excited for Castle Rock. And I'm a big fan of David Mitchell, the writer David Mitchell. Like, all of his novels take place in the same world. So I love that M. Night Shyamalan's doing that. So I can't remember the last time I've said I'm really excited for this M. Night Shyamalan movie, but I am. I'm going to go see this in theaters.
I've been saying for a couple years that he's back. The Visit was great, and Split was great.
Yeah, I remember last year we had you on and you were saying how much you enjoyed Split.
Yeah, Split was great. And if you haven't seen The Visit, that's a cool, creepy horror movie. Like, and he did that for Blumhouse. Like, he's doing all this stuff with, you know, with Jason Blum now. Mm. And he's doing them on these really small budgets, and they're great. I really hope that he's going to start doing like a movie a year with Jason Blum or something, because yeah. I don't know what happened to this guy. I mean, The Sixth Sense was great, and Unbreakable was amazing. I mean, especially at the time that Unbreakable came out, when there weren't any superhero movies, you know what I mean? Like, you were lucky if you got a superhero movie every 2 years, and you were mm-hmm. even more lucky if they were any good at all. I mean, Unbreakable came out, was Unbreakable 2001 or was it 2000? Like, so we're talking about, so we're talking about like before Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, mm-hmm. you know, maybe before the X-Men movies.
Before X-Men,
you
know, yeah. Like,
so it's like, and I went to see that and I had no idea what I was getting into. It's like, all right, well, this is the new movie from the dude, the Sixth Sense. This will be cool. I had no idea that this was like a stealth superhero movie.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, he was so good. Like, he made like 3 or 4 good movies, and then he just, like, what happened?
Yeah.
But he's always been like such an earnest guy, and you know, he certainly knows how to direct, and he's got this kind of like auteur sensibility. I'm rooting for him, and his last couple have been really good. So here comes Glass, and that trailer is cool.
Trailer's pretty cool. Sarah Paulson, Paulson is worth seeing.
Literally, he's about to say, if you just start a trailer with Sarah Paulson, National Treasure, in my opinion, you are good. You're fine.
They called me Mr. Glass. And then Godzilla. So you, again, I read your tweet, Mike, before I saw the trailer, but you love the visuals of this trailer, this Godzilla trailer, King of the Monsters.
Yeah. Did you guys enjoy the recent Godzilla movie and Kong Skull Island? Did you like those?
I am terrible, and I say I have not seen either.
Okay.
I've seen Kong Skull Island, but I did not see the last Godzilla movie.
Watch it. It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's a surprisingly kind of thoughtful and cerebral Godzilla movie.
Huh.
Godzilla King of the Monsters does not look particularly cerebral. Mm-hmm. I think because, well, one of the big complaints about the 2014 Godzilla movie was that it was slow. You know, it was slow, and it takes a while before Godzilla shows up. And it's cool. I think it's a really smart way to start that franchise. And Kong Skull Island is like kind of a prequel to it. But King of the Monsters is definitely for those of us who grew up watching, you know, those like Godzilla and like Shaw Brothers Kung Fu double features on like Channel 9 and Channel 11 in New York.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like if you used to sit around... You know, like, and like, you don't even know. It's like, oh, like Godzilla versus Megalon is on Channel 5 today. this seems to be our movie, and the visuals are gorgeous, and the colors pop, and you know, Michael Dougherty is directing it, and he did one of my favorite horror movies of the 21st century once again with Trick or Treat, and. I'm not really allowed to talk too much about Godzilla King of the Monsters, but I can tell you that there is a lot of classic giant monster love and lore in this movie. Like, if you love Toho, King of the Monsters is like a superhero movie for you. So,
really? Okay.
Yeah. And that trailer, I was not expecting that trailer to, like, you know, everything's been like, oh, cool, there'll be the other monsters in it, and, like, this cast is great, and, like, I was like, great, I'm always down for a Godzilla movie. That trailer knocked me flat.
Yeah. Wow.
Titans. Yeah, the saving Titans. The world.
Yeah, I love that narration. It was just such a cool, you know, and it immediately kind of calls to mind, you know, like, because when you're a kid, like, you know, Godzilla's, you know, he's your buddy.
Yeah.
You know, he's like helping you against the aliens, you know, and I'm just hoping, like, I hope Gamera shows up. Like, I don't know if they have the rights to Gamera. Like,
just hearing you talk about it, you're pinging my own memories of watching Channel 5 Godzilla movies when I was a kid. Yeah. So I love that you're keeping your fandom alive while covering all the stuff and running yourself ragged. but it is called Comic-Con, Mike Cecchini. So I have to ask you, just are there any interesting comic book highlights that you came across while covering San Diego Comic-Con?
Yes. Well, one of the things, you know, we started before talking about how kind of Warner Brothers needed a win for their DC movies. But DC Entertainment as a whole, including the publishing line, DC Comics, really stepped it up this year. And for the last 2 years, especially for the last year, DC Comics has been better than it has been in at least a decade. I mean, there are more... Like, some of the best creators in comics are on their most high-profile books right now. They're publishing Mr. Miracle. If you haven't been reading Mr. Miracle, I keep describing Mr. Miracle as the Westworld of superhero comics right now. And they won some Eisner Awards. You know, Mitch Gerads won an Eisner for best artist at the con over the weekend. Tom King won for Best Writer, not just for Mr. Miracle, but for his Batman work as well. But, like, their publishing line has been spectacular for the last 2 years. I feel like I'm a kid again, just like how I'm devouring DC Comics. But they announced some really cool stuff. Grant Morrison is going to be taking over Green Lantern with Liam Sharp on art. So, you know, now we have Grant Morrison, who is, you know, kind of the psychedelic explorer of the comic book world, you know, who wrote one of the best Superman stories of my lifetime and one of the great comic books of all time with All-Star Superman, but who's also done, like, crazy subversive counterculture shit, like, you know, The Invisibles. He's taken over Green Lantern. So now you have this guy who's going to tell these space stories about the entire Green Lantern Corps. And he has Liam Sharp on art, and Liam Sharp does beautiful, intricate illustrations. So the idea of Liam Sharp giving life to these creations that the Green Lanterns can make with their rings is really, really intriguing. We have Kelly Sue DeConnick, who is one of the great comic book writers of this generation, taking over Aquaman. That's a big deal, and this new Aquaman comic is going to launch just in time for the movie, and it'll be a good jumping on point for new readers. And DC is launching a combination streaming service and comic book, you know, reading thing. Like, you know, so if you have a tablet, you'll be able to read DC Comics, like, on this, like, subscription basis. So,
wow.
It's called DC Universe. And it's this integrated platform that will have – it won't have everything they've ever published. It'll have thousands of books. Like, it'll be like a Netflix thing where they'll kind of rotate their selection a little bit. But it also has a streaming video component. So you'll be able to watch, you know, Lois and Clark, if you remember that, or the old, yes, like, George Reeves Adventures of Superman TV series.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they'll have the Christopher Reeve Superman movies and the Tim Burton Batman movies.
Wow.
They've remastered the Linda Carter Wonder Woman TV series.
Yes!
Will be streaming. Yes, that will be streaming on there in HD. They've remastered it in HD for the first time ever. Batman the Animated Series will also be remastered in HD for that.
That sounds amazing.
It's really cool. I got to play with it a little bit. It's really cool. And there will be original programming as well. So I don't know if you remember, were either of you fans of the Young Justice animated series?
Because of my nephew, he got me into that. Yeah. Okay. So, yes.
Young Justice is amazing. I'm always like standing for Young Justice. Like, mm-hmm. I think Young Justice is one of the best adventure cartoons of the last 20 years, and deserves to stand side by side with any of the great DC animated shows. That had two seasons, and you know, and it has been at least 5 years. It's been like 6 or 7 years, I think, since season two ended. They will launch season three exclusively on this service.
Amazing.
There will be a live action Teen Titans, you know, Titans TV series focusing on, you know, how Robin, you know, freshly away from Batman, puts this team together. And the trailer
is this the trailer where he says, where Robin says, "Fuck Batman"?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The reaction to this was a little mixed, I found. Yeah, the reaction to Titans was a little bit mixed.
Ooh.
So, but I rather liked the "fuck Batman" line. I've been signing off my emails with "fuck Batman." Select emails. Select emails.
Right.
To, you know, to people.
No emails to mom or dad
or to my boss. Like, yeah, not
right,
to my publisher,
right, exactly.
Or my CEO.
Yeah.
So there was definitely cool comic stuff happening. Comics are still alive and well here. It's a little harder to, you know, if you're a collector, you know, back in the day, I mean, by the time I started coming to San Diego Comic-Con, it was already a big media fest. But like back in the day, I know people used to come here and would just like ship boxes of comics home. You know, you would just fill in holes in your collection, and you know, and it's not like that at New York Comic Con now either. It's just a lot harder. So I understand that people feel shortchanged, and I really hope that at some point these shows are able to find that balance between servicing the general audience and allowing the studios and the networks and the brands to do their marketing and their activations and all of the cool interactive stuff that Comic Con has come to be known for. But I'd like there still to be that stuff component, you know, where, you know, like I want to come here and buy, like, you know, beat up old Doc Savage paperbacks, or, you know, like
yeah,
that's,
yeah,
that's the stuff that I used to waste money on at cons not that long ago. Like, I mean, even like 7, 8, 9 years ago, like when New York Comic Con first started, I would come out of there with just like a backpack of musty old comics and Star Trek books and nonsense. So I hope there's a way to balance that someday, but I can't really complain about how much, you know, about how slick things are. I'm part of the problem. I'm covering it.
Well, I hope you have like some kind of shiny new Godzilla action figure in your suitcase when you come home.
Yeah. I also want to say, you know, we've covered movies, we've covered comics, and you did touch upon the fact, you know, Prestige TV, we're in the middle of it. And, you know, Comic-Con has expanded past comic books, and there's so much TV show coverage, you know, with like The Walking Dead, obviously. I saw, you know, the cast of Good Place was there. You know, Conan did Conan Con, and he had the 5-year, you know, reunion of Breaking Bad, which was like awesome to see the entire cast on stage for that. But I think the one thing that probably Sean will want to discuss is that the Buffy the Vampire Slayer reboot has been officially announced by Joss Whedon himself.
Yes. What are your thoughts on this?
I don't want it or need it. I don't. Listen, I will see anything Joss Whedon creates. Sad that I'm not going to get to see Batgirl by Joss Whedon. But I don't know. I'm so precious about my favorite series of all time. And I've read that it's supposed to be more diverse, et cetera, et cetera. I would love for it to be about Slayers, but not retelling the story of Buffy.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
yes,
like, again, keep me in that universe, the Slayer universe. But I don't want anyone other than Allison Hannigan to be Willow. And I don't mm-hmm. want anyone other than Eliza Dushku to be Faith.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
yes, this is a common reaction that I've seen. Like, I'm all about fixing the representation issues in media, and I think everybody is working towards that. I think we certainly see it on TV more now with, you know, like superhero TV is way ahead of the movies in terms of representation at this point. And it's a slow arc, but things seem to be moving in the right direction. With something like Buffy, which is still so fresh in so many people's minds and still so foundational and still so important. I mean, like, so many of the foundations of what we associate with prestige TV were, like, kind of planted in those, like, middle seasons of Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. you can start this show with a brand new Slayer, and it doesn't have to be a nudge-nudge, wink-wink fest to the past. It can be the kind of thing that fans of the classic come to with the knowledge that there's seven seasons, you know, of lore preceding it, and they can love it. But it should also be the kind of thing that a brand new fan could just come to and then discover the old one if they want to. That's kind of what Star Trek The Next Generation was. And like Star Trek, okay, so fine, the first two seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation are not terribly good. But if you had never seen an episode of Star Trek before and you tuned into an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, you would pick up on the concept and know what you were doing. And then the fact that there was this, you know, this world that existed before it only enriches it when you find out about it. And there's no reason for Buffy not to take that exact same thing. You know, make Buffy the new mentor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like make, do whatever you got to do. But it seems like a weird choice.
Yeah. And I wouldn't imagine Joss Whedon wanting to retread the path that he already created. So maybe he's going to do what we're talking about, or maybe he's going to do something 20 times more brilliant than what we want the show to be, and it'll all be okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it's the kind of, I've learned not to rush to judgment on this stuff, and you know, I tend to trust the creators that I trust, but this just seems a little weird to me, and not because of the race switching or anything like that. I don't care about any of that. This is just one case where it's like, especially because it's the same guy.
Right.
I'm a little bit confused. That's all.
It's weird. I'm trying to think of, like, there's an example of that. Like, the only thing that popped into my head was when Alfred Hitchcock made The Man Who Knew Too Much twice, but with two different sets of actors. Strange.
But those are very different times.
Yeah, strange. Yes, fingers crossed. Amita, you're going to get to hear me probably on a monthly basis voice my trepidation about this situation.
Well, I mean, I'm the one who brought it up, so the doors are open to continue to discuss this. It's still in an early stage, right? They've commissioned, you know, a reboot of the series. I mean, they still have to work on the pilot script and cast what they said will probably be a black actress as the role of Buffy, you know, but we'll see. We could see. Maybe they'll have the same thoughts that you two just described and say, you know what, maybe we should make this something else, you know, the next generation of Buffy, like you had mentioned, you know, maybe they'll realize it might be better to go in a different direction. And maybe they'll listen to this podcast and hear you guys talk about it.
I think fans would really embrace that. I really do.
I think
because
so too.
The reaction to this was kind of mixed, I felt. But I think, on the other hand, if this announcement would have just been like, look, this show is, you know, Buffy the Next Generation, I think people would have gone bananas.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we will see. Time will tell. Time will tell. But Mike, we thank you so much for joining us. We know that you've been going nonstop, full speed for a week now, but congratulations to you and your amazing team at Den of Geek, because I've been reading your website and following your tweets, and it's the next best thing to being there. I wish I were there, but it's definitely the next best
yes.
thing to being there. So thanks for all of that great information you guys have shared.
Well, thank you so much. It's always a blast to talk to you, and really thanks for the kind words. It means a lot, and I'm just lucky to have a job like this, and I'm even more lucky to have a team that backs me up this way, because they never let me down, and they let me they let me do fun stuff like this.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. Yeah. If anybody out there wants to just, if they feel they're super FOMO about what happened in San Diego Comic-Con, go to Den of Geek because you will be able to find out everything. And it's like really great. It's just like by title and trailers that have been released, and you can just find out anything that you're interested in and see the trailers and get all of that fun info from Comic-Con. Den of Geek.
So Mike, where can people follow you on social media?
If you just want to hear me rant and rave, I'm always making a fool of myself on Twitter at Way Out Stuff. But if if you're looking for the full Den of Geek experience, you want denofgeek.com, and you want to follow at Den of Geek US on Twitter, and you want to follow at Den of Geek on Instagram, and you want to follow Den of Geek US on Facebook. So that's us.
Well, thank you again, Mike, and everybody go follow them and find out everything you need to know about Comic-Con and everything pop culture. Frankly, they really do cover everything. Thanks again, and hopefully we can talk to you guys in the future about more fun pop culture, because we always love it.
Anytime.
And we'll be back with the Big Sell after these short messages.
And rolling.
The news today is terrible, so why not forget about it while listening to Jonah Radio with Cash Hartzell.
Hey, everybody.
Featuring Neil Mahoney.
Also me.
This is a podcast where we play music submitted by a listener. We hang out, we listen to new tunes, and we take submissions at Jonah Radio, RAYDIO, at gmail.com. Come and check us out. We're here anyway.
Yeah, we'll be here.
So, and that's it. Back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Are you tired of trying to keep up with the news cycle?
Is bad stuff happening too fast for you to process?
Don't you wish there was an easy way to find out about only the most important info you need?
Hi, we're Lisa.
And Emily. Why don't you try our podcast, Baby Geniuses?
On each episode of our podcast, we discuss a weird Wikipedia page, such as
flatulence humor,
Clamato,
Catalan witches,
Clippy the Microsoft Office helper,
death during consensual sex,
and the talking mongoose.
We ask each other stupid questions.
If you got a packet with like 300 seeds in it, what kind of plant would you choose the seeds to be?
That felt like you were assigned to ask me a question and there were certain words you weren't allowed to use.
We talk about Martha Stewart, her pony, and other celebrity horse news. Ben Chunch.
Every other week on Maximum
Baby
Fun.
Geniuses. Baby Geniuses.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is now time for The Big Sell. Of course, it's the segment that concludes all of our Inside Pop episodes, the segment in which Amit and I take turns recommending something from the world of pop culture to the other. This is the most melodious Big Sell intro I've ever given. I'm almost singing the Big Sell description. Y'all get it. Speak singing, which is what I do the best, at karaoke. So, Amita, for example, last week, I big sold you a new singer that I have fallen in love with. And let's just share this little behind-the-scenes bit of information with our listeners. I was so jazzed and worked up about the singer that I basically broke an unwritten rule of ours, which is I tried to speak to you about it in person. Normally what we do, super honest with all of our listeners, Amit and I, we see each other a lot, but we don't talk about the Big Sell until the next episode. But I actually broke that rule for the very first time in our 2.5 year history.
You did. I'm just going to say, since we're talking about it, we're being open here.
Uh-huh.
You broke it a couple times.
What?
You were like, have you listened yet? And then the next time I saw you, have you listened yet? And I was like, no.
All right. Not I will yet. Never. You know, I like rules. So I'm sorry. I will not break rules anymore. But to remind us, because it's been 2 weeks since we've been here with you, yeah. Jacob Banks is a new singer I discovered And I discovered him because he's going to be at Afropunk, and I've started exploring a lot of different singers who are being promoted as appearing at that wonderful music festival that happens at the end of August. So I big sold Amida an EP, his most recent EP, and also just a 20-second clip of Jacob Banks doing a cover of Frank Ocean's Nikes. So Amida, at long last, not IRL, but on this podcast, what do you think of Jacob Banks?
I didn't. Every time that you did ask me about it, I hadn't listened to him yet. And I ended up going to visit some friends this weekend. So I had a long bus ride and I was like, this is a perfect time for me to listen to his Big Cell. And I remember you describing his voice so beautifully last episode where you said he had a lot of soul and it felt like old soul and a little John Legend, but a little like deeper than his voice. And I definitely heard that in the Instagram clip of him singing Frank Ocean Nikes, which was really great. I really enjoyed his take on that song. And it was a great way to kind of get to know him as an artist with just like a 1 minute clip. And he did a really wonderful rendition of Nikes. And I felt a lot of that John Legend sound in that performance. And then I went on to, what is it? The Boy Who Cried Freedom. And I was immediately just taken by his voice. You are 100% right. It was such a really deep, beautiful sounding artist, Jacob Banks is. And I got some feelings of Seal when I heard him, that raspiness. And then, of course, the artist I couldn't stop talking about last year, Rationale. I definitely felt some vibes of Rationale in his sound as well. And I was just like, yeah, check. I'm in for this one. And I also felt a little Earl St. Clair, you know, like a younger voice doing an older sound. Mm-hmm. So I really, of course, you know that I would like this.
Yeah. We're both like that kind of Leon Bridges, Earl St. Clair.
Yeah.
I mean, Charles Bradley was actually an old soul singer.
Yes.
Young guy sounding
Charles
old.
Bradley.
And then I also wanted to tell you that, didn't you Big Cell Sanebo say to me?
I did.
They have a song together.
I know. I've been doing some research on him as well. Just like, who is this Jacob Banks? Mm-hmm. What's his status? Number one. And and then also just, you know, what else has he done? And you know what was great is that on Spotify, as you all know how much we love Spotify and we can't stop talking about it every time we talk about music. They do a great thing when you go to the artist. They'll show like some of their more popular singles and their albums and EPs. And they have this really great little feature. They say fans also like. And it'll just give you a list of a list of other artists. And on there was Rationale. And I think Sanebo Say was on it. And Rag and Bone Man, who I've enjoyed. And Sun Little, who you had recommended to me, and Jones, I think we had talked about once, and Earl St. Clair. So I was just like, yeah, we are all on the same vibe, Spotify. You know the people that we like to listen to.
It's a movement. Yeah, and I was going to try to big sell you even more of him, but then I told myself to calm down. But there is this amazing live performance that I will share in our show notes. I'll share it with you and our listeners, but he's a really great live performer and I am going to be bum rushing the front of the stage to just shout at him while he's singing, which won't be distracting at all for him, but
no, yeah. I'm sure he appreciates that.
You better sing. That's what you
mean. Yeah. Sing your heart out. You know, when I was on his Instagram page, there was a post in the last, I don't know, couple weeks of a live performance of his. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I was taken.
Yeah.
I was so taken by that, too. He also has a song. I'm just going to big sell you a little now. He also has a song that's on the upcoming Denzel Washington movie.
Yes.
The Equalizer 2. And it's called In the Name of Love, which I also ended up listening to and really enjoyed that as well.
Look who's taking a deep dive into Jacob Banks.
Well,
Miss
I mean,
Amida
when
Patel.
You keep reminding me and talking about him, how can I not, Sean?
So we love Jacob Banks. We're going to stalk him at Afropunk. And when you meet him, Amida, and he asks you, well, how many stars did you give me on that episode of Inside Pop, what will you say to him?
I am going to say solid 3.5 stars for Jacob Banks.
Jacob Banks will thank you for those 3.5 stars.
I bet he would. And he'll take me to dinner, too. All right. So
he's also one of the most stylish new singers I've seen. I love his whole style. Yes. I think it's very Sean David Johnson in that it's very clean and simple, but there's some style to it. That's kind of what I aspire to. I don't always achieve it, but I aspire to that kind of like very classic, streamlined, but interesting.
I think that's how you, that's your style. Yeah, I see you in that. I see you. Oh, I see your style.
It's nice to be seen. okay. So I'm so happy that you like Jacob Banks, I think as much as I do. So that is a relief and a pleasure. So what do you have to big sell to me this week, Amita Patel?
Well, a new song from a classic artist that I was super surprised to hear and I kind of enjoyed. Chaka Khan is back, if you haven't heard.
I have not heard.
And Chaka Khan has put out a song called Like Sugar, mm-hmm. which is a really fun, updated Chaka Khan style song. And I played it. I have to thank, obviously, our good friend James Barker, Chaotic DJ. He told me about it and he was just like, Chaka Khan is back. You got to listen to this. And he played it for me and I was just like, yes, Chaka Khan.
Okay.
So I was like, yeah, I've got to share this with Sean and reminisce about that one time that I tried to get out to Brooklyn to see Chaka Khan with you and it didn't work out.
It did not work out, but yeah. Well, my cousin kept me company, so we saw Chaka yes. Khan. And listen, she is one of the greats, one of the great soul mm-hmm. singers. Has she the propensity for forgetting lyrics sometimes when she performs live recently? Yes, is the answer. But do we want her to succeed? And do I want to love this new song? The answer is also yes.
Okay, good. Slightly shady response, but great. Please listen to Like Sugar by Chaka Khan. It's on Spotify. And let me know what you think.
Quick tangent. I was getting a bagel this morning with my husband. And I Feel For You came on at the bagel store. And, of course, this is what happens. This is what you sign up for. All he's trying to do is get a bagel. And I just turned to him. I'm like, Chris, do you realize that in this one song, it's written by Prince, it's Stevie Wonder on harmonica, and it's Chaka Khan's vocals at her peak in the mid-80s? And he's like, but he actually appreciated all that information, which he didn't know any of it. So,
I love Chris. Okay. That's amazing. Did you sing it to him? Did you say, I feel for you?
Well, there was no. Not in the bagel shop. Well, it was during the Stevie Wonder harmonica section that I made my little speech. So there was no singing, just appreciating. And so no, I'm sorry for the shady comment, but I do think she is one of the greats, and her music with Rufus in the 70s was incredible. So I'm
tell
here
me something
for
good.
Yes. So I take back whatever shade may have been.
No, it's okay. It was a partial shade.
Okay. Plant in partial shade. Okay.
All right, well, that is it for this week. Shade and no shade and all. So we're just going to wrap it up now. And as of course, we obviously want to stay in touch with you guys. Please head over to Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. Go to Facebook, Inside Pop Podcast. And then, you know, if you feel like web surfing, go to insidepoppodcast.com. You can find out more about us. Subscribe to the podcast. You can listen to old episodes. Go ahead. Find us. Talk to us. Let us know what you like about the podcast. Let us know what you want to hear. Tell us if you went to some Comic-Con. Let us know what you saw there.
We'd also like to give a shout out to listener Tomas Rosado. He sent me a message saying that he listened to one of our episodes and really enjoyed it. And we always love when listeners reach out. And he also gave us a big sell. So he listened to our Diva episode where we talked about our divas who defined moments in our lifetime. That's one of my favorite episodes, Amita.
Oh, I love that conversation. That was really great.
I really love that. Well, let's put that in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And Tomas was really cool, so he was very complimentary towards us, and he also gave us a big sell. So I spoke a lot about Eurythmics Savage, and ooh, Retraction. I don't know how I made this mistake, because I listened back to part of that episode, and I said that Savage came out in 1989. Who am I? It came out in 1987. I don't know how I made that mistake. I'll be paying penance for that later. But
oh, it's okay. We forgive you.
Tomas recommended a book that I had never heard of before called Heavy Rotation, 20 writers writing about the albums that changed their lives. And the Ooh. Author of Lemony Snicket wrote a full essay about Eurythmics Savage.
What?
I really thought I was the only person who loved this album so much, but Tomas loves Savage, and the author of Lemony Snicket loves Savage and wrote this beautiful homage to why that album affected him so much. So, oh, it's so nice when you realize that you're not completely alone in your pop culture, very specific, very niche obsessions. So thank you, Tomas, very much. We love that kind of interaction with listeners, so keep it coming. Please give us information. Give us big sells. I'm reading the essay right now.
That's an awesome big sell. Thank you, Tomas.
Thank you, Tomas.
And as always, you guys can stay up to date with all of your pop culture every other week here on Inside Pop.
Have a great week, everyone.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.